As darkness fell on the Eagles' wings camp, a bonfire and music started, almost at the same time, from the south end of camp by the gate stream. The informal council of war had ended, and Valentine and Duvalier were feeling the effects of 2 days of riding and little sleep.
It's still Calvin Festival. I hope you young folk will join in the fun after your hard ride.
Just some sleep would do nicely, ma'am.
Won't keep you then. We're going to talk over what you told us and decide what to do. Don't let the music fool you. We're taking this very seriously. We'll have extra riders out tonight and people on the walls. Please feel free to stay here as long as you want. We'll handle the Paul Revere job from here on out. Jocelyn, show our guests to the visitor's cabin.
A saddle-muscled young woman stood up. Jocelyn Hendricks wore a man's moleskin hand-me-downs, brightened by a red neckerchief wrapped around her thick brown hair. She stepped around behind the cats.
Thank you for the dinner, Mrs. Hendricks.
Valentine swallowed the last of his milk.
Yes, it was wonderful. Thanks for the bed, too. It's going to be very welcome.
They zigzagged through the maze of wagons, tents, washing lines, and campfires. Jocelyn paused at the little ladder and door of one of the house wagons, set apart from the rest.
People are going to be asking me what our chances are. What should I tell them? They'll be worried about their children.
Valentine looked at Duvalier, who shrugged.
I can't tell you what to say, Miss Hendricks. If they're somewhere safe they can put their kids, I'd recommend they do that right away. Reapers move fast at night when they want to. They could be here tonight.
We'll be here with you at least tonight. I believe that if anyone in the dunes can beat them, it's your brand.
Jocelyn showed them the cozy little cabin with its bunk beds, tiny cabinets, and built-in basin.
There's water in the pitcher, clean bedding on the mattresses, real horsehair stuff, and a thunder bucket in the corner in case you don't feel like a trip to the pits. I'll check on your horses intact before I turn in. They're in the north corral. There'll be dancing until midnight or so. You sure you aren't up to it? A lot of the folks would be interested in meeting people from elsewhere.
We just spent 2 days traveling hard. I'm sure you understand.
Another time, I hope.
All right. Maybe tomorrow night, then.
Jocelyn closed the door. Duvalier placed her sword down where she could reach it easily.
If there is a tomorrow night, Val.
No call to arms, no attack from the darkness disturbed their dreamless slumber. It seemed only a matter of minutes before Valentine opened his eyes to light pouring through the window. Mrs. Hendricks entered, bearing a tray.
Good morning. Anyone up? I've brought you a little something to get your eyes open.
Valentine realized he had collapsed in his clothes and guiltily looked at the mess he'd made of the sheets. Duvalier had stripped down to her shirt, and she swung her legs from the bottom bunk.
I thought I might kill two birds with one stone, so I brought some sausages and wheat bread and a cup of tea for each of you. Nothing happened over the night. The meeting went until late, and we decided to scatter some of the herds and families. We sent out riders to warn the other brands and asked them to send what men and guns they could this way. We're going to have to unite to stand any chance at all from what you've told us.
How soon will they be arriving?
Days. The dunes are big, and in the summer the smaller brands get to the most remote places they can. If the troopers raid into us, it's usually between May and September.
Valentine removed the flycloth from his breakfast and began eating. Duvalier nursed her tea, content to listen and look out the window.
How can we help?
You've done enough by my reckoning. But if you want to, go round, speak to the men. Maybe tell them a little more about those reapers. We don't have much experience against them, and what we do know has us all frightened.
We'll do what we can.
After the wagon master left, Smoke looked at Valentine.
I'm frightened too.
Never thought I'd hear that from you.
Duvalier went to the basin and wrung out a washcloth and wiped it across her face.
Hear me admit it, you mean? We've warned them, Val. Let's head out.
I'm staying. You've got more experience at this. You'll be better without me.
Staying? Staying like in desertion?
Staying like in helping them fight. We've been over this before.
I figured once you saw them, you'd either figure there were enough guns for the fight so that you being here wouldn't make a difference one way or the other, or you'd
See, it was a lost cause.
Valentine stood for a moment. He feared the coming fight, but wanted it as well.
Do I have a death wish?
Ah, I'll quit trying. You're a lost cause, Valentine. No wonder your captain had you court-martialed.
She must have seen the hurt in his eyes, because her tone softened.
Sorry. You deserved that. I shouldn't have said it. I'm gonna scrounge up some supplies. Think about it before I ride out.
Valentine spent the day with Waldron, the camp engineer, trying to forget about Duvalier by inspecting the defenses. The Eagles had a trench around the camp, hurriedly being made as wide and deep as the sandy soil would allow. Shovelfuls of thrown dirt rained dust and pebbles that made skittering noises as they bounced off the metal panels of the walls. Some of the corrugated sheets that served as armor on the outside of the battle wagons still had sections of vaguely familiar logos from the old world.
Took a lot of these facings from old rigs. Big engines called semis used to haul these trailer fares. Metal's light and strong.
Valentine ran his hand along the dirty old surface, printed on with huge letters. Adway. Farther down, the red Coca-Cola label protected one of the flanking corners. Valentine thought it strange that one of the most persistent holdovers of the old world was its product marketing. Like the advertisements for gladiatorial contests that he read could still be seen on a wall or two in Rome.
Been a long time since we had to shoot from the walls of the camp. Last time it was because we got surprised. A few years back, the troopers reinforced a bunch of their trucks and loaded them with men. Came barreling at us across the plain. I think the idea was to ram through the walls. Sure, tin and sand stopped bullets, but not a truck moving at 40 miles an hour or more. They either didn't know much about physics or they forgot about the trench. They hit it and killed most everyone in the trucks. We hardly had to fire a shot.
He lifted up his shoe, and Valentine smiled at the serrated pattern of a truck radial.
Got a damn long-lasting pair of shoes out of it, and a good laugh.
You said you had some artillery?
Huh. Pair of mortars and less than 30 shells. 81 millimeter. Let me show you what we have come up with, though.
They cut through a hidden angle in the battle wagons and climbed up into the bed. A shiny cylinder that Valentine recognized as an old artillery shell casing, probably a 155 millimeter, sat in a metal trough secured by a heavy steel cover. A fuse, curled like a pig's tail, dangled behind. The whole affair stood on a tripod welded to an old metal wheel.
This is kind of based on a swivel gun. You can point it using the mount, but your aim doesn't have to be very precise with this cracker. It's an artillery shell casing sitting on a half-cut pipe there. We loaded it up with powder and put a bag of taconite pellets on the top of the wad. No range to it whatsoever, but it'll sweep 20 yards in front of the gun like you were using a broom, and more beyond if you get lucky. We got a version that goes on the ground, too, in a wooden holder. Strictly one shot. Takes us a good while to clean and reload it if the casing doesn't crack.
That thing's as much of a threat to the men behind the weapon as the enemy in front.
We also have some grenades we took off the troopers, but not enough. And coal oil bombs, which are really just sawdust and the oil mixed in an old vodka bottle. And that's our artillery.
After lunch, Valentine met with Duvalier. She spent the morning after her scrounge riding with Danvers, going from point to point looking for signs of the Twisted Cross. Eagle Brand families took a portion of the cattle and dispersed to hiding places among the dunes.
They're great trackers and the best horse-riding guerrilla fighters since the Apache. Plenty of rifles, but not enough support and artillery.
Valentine was happy to find her equitable, or just resigned to him staying.
Same thing in camp. The Reapers will tear this place apart from a couple hundred yards, and there won't be much they can do about it. All the guts in the world aren't much of a help against Kalashnikovs in the hands of something that isn't disturbed by catching a bullet.
The little red and white plane appeared just then, high in the sky, hardly audible even to Valentine's ears. He felt a chill as it threw a wide circle around the camp before moving off eastward. It was like the ravens of the Middle Ages, who would gather along with the armies in anticipation of the coming carnage.
Rider coming in!
It was the sentry mounted in the crow's nest at the central cluster of wagons calling out. Valentine saw Josh Hendricks go toward the gate with the deacon. Valentine and Duvalier looked at each other, shrugged, and joined the cluster of people, wondering what new calamity the rider portended. It was a boy on a lathered horse. Valentine guessed him to be somewhere between 14 and 16. He was dressed like a Comanche in a leather loincloth and vest, and had a blanket saddle on his black horse. His mount dribbled, foamed, and glistened with sweat. An older man next to Valentine scratched his whiskers.
The boys out of the queue are Twin Triangles brands, is my guess. Don't look like good news either.
The kid rolled off his horse, half fall and half dismount. Josh Hendricks poured him some water out of a canteen.
Triangle's camp's been burned. Last night, we were camped between Middle Loop and the Middle Branch. I was outrider to the north and I heard shooting. All of a sudden, the wagons was going up in flames. Then up came the Gerson family. Mr. Gerson was shot and looked real pale. His sons were carrying him. Mrs. Gerson told me to ride up and warn you. She said there weren't no troopers. They came with guns and explosives and the bullets didn't even seem to touch them. I asked about my pa and ma and she didn't know. She said she was sorry.
Damn, that isn't far at all. Just east of here, maybe 4 hours ride. And not a hard ride neither.
Big difference here though. We know they're coming.
We know the sun's gonna set in about 5 hours, son. But there ain't nothing we can do about it.
The deacon handed the boy the reins to his horse.
See to your horse, son.
Then he turned on the gloomy man next to Valentine.
Have a little faith, Brother Tom. The Lord seen fit to bless us with a warning and some help. He'll be with us tonight.
Tom's words troubled Valentine as the sun lowered toward the horizon, as slow and deadly and inevitable as Poe's pendulum. He learned more about the Twin Triangles. Though not numerous, they were as good a group of riders and shooters as existed in the dunes. The Eagles had more fighters, but would that just mean more bodies to be buried? With the teens and older men armed, the Eagles could horse a force of 500 men. But nearly 100 of these were with some of the women and children and livestock who had scattered into hiding after the decision by the Common Defense Committee last night. Dozens more were riding across the dunes now as messengers to the other brands. The foundation of the brand, their wealth and their sustenance, was the cattle, and the animals had to be moved and protected. This deducted another 150 riders. That left a force of a little over 200 women and men able to stand in the wagons, backed up by teens old enough to shoot for the camp. One of the scouts sent back word during supper that a convoy of vehicles had been spotted west on the old Highway 2. The trooper-marked column wasn't making good time. Weather and actions of the trekkers reduced the road to little more than a bad path, but they were clearly heading for the Eagle camp. The Twisted Cross were intent on smashing the largest brand in the dunes, probably sometime after nightfall. A few voices suggested that they pull up stakes and move at dusk, leaving nothing but empty space for them to attack. But Hendricks vetoed the idea with the weight of the common defense behind her. Valentine explained that with the Reaper's ability to read life sign, the mass of moving wagons would shine like a lighthouse across a calm sea, and Reapers would be able to cover whatever miles the wagons put between them and the camp that same night. They would be better off fighting it out from behind trench and wall. As the sun set, a mist began to steal across the valley beneath the great rolling hill.
That's strange for this time of year, especially in the evening.
Mrs. Hendricks watched the veil thicken around the camp.
It's the Currians. They can shape the clouds when they have a mind.
Duvalier lingered through the day, saying she wanted to rest her legs and her horse.
Val, I'll ride now. You still staying?
Her tone was nonchalant, but he read concern in her eyes.
Yes.
There wasn't a fight this time. The pair went to their packs in the guest wagon. Duvalier stripped down to a utility vest, perhaps some old angler's jacket or photographer's rig at some time, now dyed. She now loaded it with everything from her claws to screw-topped pipes filled with chemicals designed to burn or blow up. She began to apply black grease paint across her face and arms as Valentine sharpened her sword. The straight, angle-pointed blade had a dull coating everywhere save the very edge, where it glinted with cold reflections.
I'm gonna be outside the camp before the sun goes down. I plan to stick to them like a tick. You live through this, you can catch up to me south of Omaha, where I got that pheasant, remember? Just head east till you hit the Missouri.
I'm not leaving these people until things are decided, one way or the other.
Neither am I. This column means there's a headquarters for it. I'm gonna find those troopers and see what I can see. Could you help me with this grease paint?
Valentine coated her shoulders and the backs of her arms with the ebony grease, leaving the occasional strip of sun-darkened flesh exposed to break up the human pattern. She looked like a black and tan tiger. Her torso finished, Duvalier slipped into baggy black pants with enormous cargo pockets on the thighs and her trusty old hiking boots. She tucked her red hair under a dark, insignia-less kepi. It was the standard issue hat of Southern Command, dyed black.
If I learn anything useful, I'll try to leave you a message somewhere outside the Twisted Cross camp. Look for a pile of four of anything sticking up. Rocks, sticks, whatever. I'll leave a note under it.
Be careful.
You too. Don't get your head blown off, Ghost.
Don't get caught lighting any fires, Smoke.
She took a step toward him, and evidently thought better of it. Instead, she opened the door. She touched the side of her hand to her eyebrow, and then dragged her index finger down her grease-painted nose, and left. Fog and night closed in on the camp. The lantern lights glowed like amber gems, each surrounded by a tiny halo. Valentine stepped out of the guest house wagon. He wore his old wolf buckskins instead of his traveling coat, now like Duvalier's night gear, darkened to a chocolate color. The heavy vest weighed at his shoulders. His parang and revolver still hung from the sweat-darkened leather and canvas equipment belt he could not bring himself to let go. But now it had additional gear added. The old curved sword hung across his back, and the two spare drums for the submachine gun were clipped above each buttock where once canteens rode. His fighting claws, worn more for luck than because he expected to use them, hung around his neck from a breakaway leather shoelace like Everready's old necklace of Reaper teeth. Even with the 71-round drum in it, the submachine gun had a nice balance. He sat down on the tiny steps to the wagon, broke down the gun, cleaned and oiled it, and put it back together again. Valentine flicked the little switch in front of the trigger from full automatic to semi-auto and back again, listening to the inner workings of the gun. He put the drum back on and chambered the first round. He looked at the stock and looked again before he recognized what he saw. Someone had marred Tank Bourne's carefully stained and lacquered finish and carved a little heart in the stock, no bigger than the nail on his pinky. A Valentine? It must have been Allie, in one of her sentimental fits. He wondered if she kissed it after she etched the icon. Of course, he knew many soldiers with strange little rituals they practiced to bring fortune. One of his wolves used to chew a terrible gum made of pine sap before action, as though as long as his jaws worked, he knew he was still alive. Valentine tried to relax, but his body refused to cooperate. He decided to walk the perimeter as darkness fell. The inner ring of wagons had been drawn into a tighter circle, trek toes lashed under the wagon in front of it, with the little house wagons parked in the gaps. The remaining women and children were huddled in a quiet mass around the main campfire. Jocelyn Hendricks read by firelight from some children's books. She looked up and met Valentine's eyes.
Wren, read the rest of this, would you?
She stepped lightly between the children in her pointed toe boots and joined Valentine.
These are the kids whose parents won't let them go. They figure if anything's gonna happen, they want it to happen to everyone. Is it as bad as that?
Are the kids okay?
The little ones just know something's wrong. The older ones are so busy pretending to be brave, they don't ask questions. But I can tell they're listening. Not to my story or the music. They're trying to listen for the sounds outside the camp.
Then you're pretending to be brave reading, and I'm pretending to be brave walking around with a gun.
It's not pretending. At least not with you.
Valentine looked down at the young woman, scarecrow lean in her hand-me-downs. Duvalier was the bravest person he'd ever met, and she voiced her fears. Why couldn't he admit to them as well?
I'm scared all the time. Scared of dying, scared of doing something stupid that causes others to die. Scared that no matter what I do...
Valentine stopped, not wanting to sink into nervous garrulity, especially not in front of this young woman he had just met.
No matter what you do, what's that mean?
Not making a difference.
A quick, embarrassed flush came over her, and she rose to the points of her boots and brushed her lips against his cheek.
I feel safer with you here, with our wagons. So that's a difference, isn't it?
Then she fled the kiss's rebuff or return to the circle of children. Outside the central ring, Valentine met Waldron, setting up the last of his one-shot cannons to cover the outlet for the spring. more battle wagons, ready to roll, had been placed to block the gate.
The lookout up on top of the ridge says the fog isn't thick at all, doesn't even come up to the hilltop. Says he thought he saw movement on Stake Ridge. Where's your lady?
Out there.
Valentine gestured with the ugly muzzle on the gun.
Oof. No kidding? You wouldn't get me out there on a night like tonight, not with them reapers on the prowl. They can see through fog, right?
Fog, night, rain, it's all the same to them. They can read off of something else.
Body heat, like old infrared equipment?
No, but it's generated by our bodies. Some kind of energy. It's what they, or rather their masters, feed off of. Your cattle create it too.
Rider coming in!
The observation tower was useless in the fog. Mrs. Hendricks hopped down from the wall, where she had been talking to some of the men on guard, showing fair athleticism for a woman her age. The deacon stepped forward, putting on his tall formal hat, but she moved in front of him. Valentine half expected one of Tolkien's Nazgul shapes to appear out of the misty darkness drifting thick around the camp, but it was only a tired-looking rider.
Don't shoot now!
The man rode forward with his reins in one hand and his other in the air.
I'm Deke Thomas with the Bar 7, speaking for Wagon Master Lawson. Where's Wagon Master Hendricks?
Dead, son. I'm his wife. I'm filling in. Say your piece.
He heard you were gathering outriders, and he's come himself with 95, horsed and equipped. We came as fast as we could, so we need provisions.
Glory be.
The deacon raised his eyes to the fog-shrouded heavens.
Tell him he's welcome. Tell him he'll get his payment for helping those messengers along, and a lot more besides. Tell him I'm grateful for his help, and I'm glad to see that the bad blood between him and my man is forgotten. Now's the time to put aside our differences if we're going to get through this.
He's a half hour away at most. We had to ride carefully. Before this fog set in, we spotted some troopers. They must have forgotten what happened the last time.
Now, with your wagon master's help, we'll teach him another one, Mr. Thomas.
Josh Hendricks approached, coming up in support of his mother. Thomas walked his horse back into the fog, and they heard it break into a trot.
Well, that's news we can use. Close to 100! He must have emptied his camp.
Valentine felt his stomach tighten in turmoil. All wrong. Something's all wrong about this.
Funny.
Ma'am, I don't like the sound of this. When we spoke yesterday, Mr. Lawson just didn't seem right to me. He looked nervous when I asked him about that scout plane. He was sure of your camp's location, like it'd been on his mind.
Nothing unusual in that. Are you trying to start something, stranger? Didn't the man help you on your way? He could have just killed you or turned you over to them when you were in his camp.
Quiet now, Josh. Let the man speak. I've got a worry or two, and I want to see if his are the same.
Well, first, it sounds like there's some history between your brands. I don't know what it is, but bad blood can make people do crazy things, especially if the hurt is recent. Second, is he the type of wagon master to strip his wagons, leave his herd almost unguarded with enemies in the area, to come to the aid of someone else? Unless he was sure they wouldn't be touched, that is.
That's true enough.
Third, he knew a lot about your camp, where it was, the calving, but none of his men must have talked to yours, or he'd know you were the new wagon master. Finally, his brand was also on the line of march from the Platte. But the triangles got wiped out, and his wasn't. You'd think his whole brand would have spent the last day running for their lives.
Josh Hendricks shook his head.
Pa used to say I could think better than most, Mom. I'm thinking this is plain stupid.
Hush now, Josh.
The boy ignored her with 15-year-old certainty.
Ha! No trekker has ever rolled over for them. I don't think even Lawson would be that low. His men would string him up. They can't all be bad apples. I bet my life on it.
Mrs. Hendricks looked out into the fog.
Well, I've got to think about more lives than just my own. But we'll see. You may have to bet just that with the help of our new friend here.
20 minutes later, Lawson and his outriders came into the camp through a gap in the gate battle wagons. Two tables laden with food and drink stood near the gate on one side, opposite the little shallow with the stream running out of camp. A fire burned cheerfully in the center. The deacon stood in the light, enjoying a bottle of beer and one of Valentine's cigars. Valentine watched events from beneath a house wagon in the second line in the center of camp. Rocks, cases, kegs, and dirt were piled up under the wagons, hiding him and 24 men good at rapid rifle fire. A few feet in front of him, Josh Hendricks stood, Valentine's revolver tucked in the back of his belt. A man sighted down his lever action next to Valentine.
Look at those guns. There ain't a man there who wasn't ready to shoot. You think they suspect us?
No. I think they're supposed to do this in a hurry.
Valentine's heart sounded loud in his chest. A fight was coming. He felt it in every raised hair. At the sight of all the ready guns and the antsy-looking men, Josh Hendricks seemed to shrink back into his clothes as he stepped forward. Lawson stood up in his stirrups and looked around the walls, where a few of the Eagles were on guard. He scratched his heavy growth of beard with the front sight on his pistol.
We sure are glad to see you, Wagon Master Lawson.
The deacon edged closer to the boy.
We're short men on the north wall. After you eat, you think you could get your outriders to screen us from the ridgeside?
Those your orders, boy?
Lawson squinted at Hendricks.
No, my mother's. She's wagon master of this camp.
Not anymore.
Lawson shot Hendricks in the chest twice, and the youth toppled backwards, falling almost in front of Valentine. Valentine's riflemen brought their guns up as the Bar Sevens wheeled their horses toward the walls. The food and drink tables upended, men appearing from underneath like shotgun-armed jack-in-the-boxes, blazing away at the surrounding horses. From the walls, men fired down into the mass of emptying saddles and screaming horses. Three Bar Seven outriders managed to get outside the gate before the battle wagons were pushed together behind them, but explosion flashes from the swivel guns swept them into a bloody dying heap in the trench. The deacon crawled through the flying lead and dancing hooves, pulling Josh. He dragged him beneath the wagons and stayed put. It was over in less than a minute. With the gate shut, a few of the Bar Seven men flung their rifles down and dived off their horses. Some tried to crawl out under the wagons, only to be rounded up by the men from behind the tables who advanced into the slaughter yard to pistol the crippled horses and pick up the wounded men.
Come on out!
Valentine raised his gun over his head and waved it. He and the snipers emerged from beneath the wagon to join the deacon and Josh.
How is he?
Gasping for air, scared, and a godly man for the rest of his days, I'll bet.
The deacon pulled apart Josh's shirt to reveal Valentine's bulletproof vest. The deacon extracted out the flattened remnants of a slug and tossed it from hand to hand like a hot chestnut. Josh Hendricks got to his feet and removed the vest, handing it to Valentine.
I guess I owe you an apology, sir.
Valentine looked at the deacon.
Hey, deacon. No harm letting them think the sneak attack worked.
The deacon's eyebrows came together. Then a grin split his face.
Good Lord, yes.
He turned to the walls.
Fire off a shot now and then, like they're mopping up.
Ghost!
Duvalier. Valentine ran to the front gate. His fellow cat stood, barely visible in the mist and the light thrown by a reflector lantern.
Can't stop for more than a moment. Can you hear me?
I'm here.
A trooper and another of these Bar Seven turncoats were waiting about a couple hundred yards out.
What did she say? Why is she so quiet?
Anything we have to be worried about?
No, I took care of them. One's just behind me and the other's in the stream if you want to get their weapons. I just listened in at their camp. They're waiting for a signal. Watch your north wall, too.
For what?
No idea.
Get out of here.
It's a good night for hunting, Ghost. You were right about the Bar Seven after all. I'm impressed. Good luck.
She disappeared into the fog-weighted night. Waldron was replacing the expended charge in the trough of the swivel gun with a new shell.
Signal, huh?
Yes. I think I need to ask a few questions.
The deacon was finishing his cigar, while a woman in a white calving smock tied a tourniquet around the leg of Wagon Master Lawson as Valentine approached. Lawson looked around at his shattered outriders, tears of pain or anguish streaming down his cheeks.
Shut up bad. They made all kinds of promises. I thought I'd become the biggest cattle king in the history of Nebraska, able to run the dunes as long as I didn't cause them trouble. But soon as they got into camp, they started showing who was boss. That damn general guy ordering us around, treating my men like dirt. What could I do? All the women and kids are in their hands now.
Valentine approached the pair. The medic looked up at him and gave a tiny negative shake of her head. The ground beneath Lawson was black with blood.
Damn, that tobacco smells good, Dee. Now, I haven't had a real smoke in months.
Give him one, Deacon.
Ah, thanks.
Lawson closed his eyes. For a moment, Valentine thought he would die. Then they opened again.
Hey, you're the one with the horses trying to warn people. They asked me some questions about you, too. I gave them a wagon load of bullshit.
Valentine whispered something into the deacon's ear. He nodded.
Lawson here. Hold my Bible. The good book's about the only comfort I got for you. You don't have much more time in this here world, so maybe you want to think about the next. You can help us. Tell us what you were supposed to do once you took the camp.
So, in my pocket, flare pistol, fire when we got the camp.
Valentine found the wide-mouthed pistol as he was still listening to the occasional shot or two still ringing out.
My men, have pity, wounded, ain't...
The deacon checked his pulse.
Not dead yet, but soon. God have mercy on you, wagon master.
Deacon took his Bible back from the relaxing fingers.
Eternal rest unto you, child of the risen Lord. Amen.
When the deacon's hat was back on, Valentine picked up Lawson's pistol and handed it to Josh.
Souvenir for you, Josh.
Valentine turned back to the preacher.
Deacon, get me Waldron.
Mrs. Hendricks looked out over the slaughtered men and horses, shaking her head and patting down her hair as eagle hands dragged the bodies away and lined up. Valentine didn't need his wolf's nose to tell she smelled like gun smoke.
Wagon Master, this may work to our advantage. They were supposed to send up a flare when they seized the camp. If we send it up, the general's men might come in. I expect they'll be careful about it, but they'll still get close enough to have a look. I think if we can hit them then with some of Waldron's one-shot wonders, we can shorten the odds.
Waldron joined Valentine and the deacon. The four hashed out a plan and then gave it to the leaders to pass among the eagles. They would fire the flare and the gates would be opened. When the Twisted Cross or the troopers or whatever walked or rode in, they would fire every one of Waldron's cannons on command. Valentine described the main targets.
Tall humans, probably in body armor or at least heavy robes. They'll also have some serious hardware, battle rifles with curved magazines. Don't waste your cannon on the troopers if they come in. Just try to get the Reapers.
Mrs. Hendricks fired the flare gun herself. The missile arced up into the mist and bathed the camp in its red light, glowing and hissing as it descended from the heavens like the star Wormwood.
Remember, cheer as they approach the gate.
Every cannon Waldron could load was clustered around the gate, and the wooden mine versions were hidden behind dead horses and in front of the wagon wall. They would explode in a hail of splinters and scrap metal. Valentine crouched in the cold waters of the spring, waiting. One of the men on the wall peered into the mist.
What the hell?
Cheer! Yell your heads off!
Would you look at that Goliath?
Deacon crouched behind a dead horse. His cigar tip glowed above the cannon fuse.
Let it in! Let it in! The troops are coming in behind it!
Valentine half closed his eyes. Quiet. Centered. Valentine pictured his consciousness as a large blue ball filling the horizon, and breathing deeply, he shrank it and shrank it, all the while inhaling and exhaling from a point at the bottom of his ribcage. He felt his heart slow, felt the whole world slow. The people around started to look like mannequins, dummies like he'd seen turning round and round in shop windows in Chicago. With his mind faint and open, he felt the presence of Reapers. A lot of them, terribly near, and coming closer, cold, will-o'-the-wisps of death drifting toward him out of the fog. Valentine's first view of the Twisted Cross, coming straight at him out of the midnight fog, froze him in place. A tracked vehicle, like a bulldozer with armored plates on its arms and front instead of a blade, towed a tanker trailer that someone torch-cut and welded into a mobile fortress. Crew-served machine guns pointed out each side of the trailer, and the windows and doors of the tractor were covered with slitted armored plating. Behind them, in two columns, came the Reapers of the Twisted Cross. More like insects than men, they wore carapaces of heavy body armor, topped by visor-covered helmets that hung down at the sides and back like old samurai versions. The battle Reapers held assault weapons at the ready and bulb-headed tubes in a harness on their backs. The Eagle men continued cheering, some of them almost hysterically. A few inched away, ready to run for cover at the first shot. Valentine crawled and flattened himself into the depression cut by the stream of water as the battle rig rolled overhead, its bulk straddling the little spring with ease.
Come on, Waldron. Now.
The swivel guns blew off in such quick succession, an avalanche of sound and air pressure washed over Valentine. From beneath the still-moving trailer, he saw armored figures knocked down, some never to rise again. Others seemed not to even feel the blasts, and they turned to fill the night with muzzle flashes like yellow flowers blossoming. Deafened by the swivel gun blasts and the gunfire, Valentine crawled out from beneath the trailer. A Reaper ran toward the back of the truck, trying to take cover from the crossfire streaming down from the battle wagons. Valentine rose to his feet with his gun at his shoulder. The Reaper pulled up and stared, perhaps surprised by his sudden appearance. It brought up its gun, but caught a chattering blast from Valentine's PPD through its visor and into its face. He heard the machine guns in the armored trailer firing, stitching the side of the battle wagons to either side. Men toppled and dived for cover. Valentine turned. He took two steps toward the rear of the sawed-off tanker and leapt. He vaulted high into the air, as if lifted by an invisible pole over the 10-foot moving wall. The cat landed on a walkway that ran along the spine of the converted tanker. The top hatch was round like a manhole, locked tight. He found a fan mounting on one of the sloping sides, the exterior closed by wire designed to keep grenades out. Quisling mechanics take no pride in their work. Quick and cheap does it every time. Valentine squatted next to the wire, ignoring bullets whistling all around. Balancing on the balls of his feet, he coiled his body, grabbed, strained, and tore the thin grating free. Then he kicked the plastic blades out of the way. He tucked the gun and dropped inside the vast trailer tank. Only one shooter had time to even look in astonishment at the intruder who appeared in their midst as if conjured out of the fog. Valentine swept the gun bay with a burst from a submachine gun, sending men sprawling. The semi was turning, bringing its deadly sides to bear on the main gate, the drivers in the cab still unaware of the destruction wreaked in the rear. Valentine pulled the machine gun facing the wall of wagons out of its mount. He climbed up to the firing position at the front of the old tanker, using a step that gave him a clear view out over the top of the tracked dozer. The driver and his companion traded shots with the Eagles on the wall from within their reinforced cockpit. Nothing but canvas and wire mesh stood between him and the two men in the cab. He shoved the gun tight into his shoulder and pressed the trigger of the big gun. The muzzle flash blinded him. When he lifted his finger and could see again, both men lay dead in the bullet-riddled cab. Valentine went to the other machine gun slit in the tanker wall. It was a well-designed weapons bay, a slit cut in the armored side of the trailer with the gun mounted on a tripod behind a second bulletproof shield. Through the slit, he could see a triangle of Reapers. They had made it past the gate, firing all around as bullets hit their body armor. They seemed invulnerable. A grenade exploded amidst the three, causing one to drop to his knees. It righted itself and continued firing. Valentine sighted the weapon on its tripod and loosed a long burst of heavy caliber rounds. The first Reaper went down, broken in half by the machine gun. Another's head vanished when it turned to look at the first, and the grenade-wounded third tried to crawl away after he knocked it over with a blast. Valentine put 100 rounds into it in short bursts before it finally lay still.
Get a hold of yourself. Use your brain as well as this gun.
Fighting the madness still heating his blood, Valentine dropped two more twisted cross off the wall. Another team of the enemy vaulted into one of the battle wagons. One removed the head of the defender in the wagon with a single hand thrust up and under the eagle's chin. Its companion fired a weapon that looked like a plunger with a football glued to the end of it. The warhead took off in a whoosh of rocket sparks and exploded under a battle wagon, tossing men and debris into the air. Valentine emptied the weapon into that pair, knocking one, its midsection torn to a pulp of black goo, into the bullet-riddled wall, and blowing the other off the parapet. It fled, swinging over the wagons and into the trench, minus an arm and a leg. Working as though possessed, Valentine lifted a new ammunition belt from the locker at the base of the weapon and opened the feeder at the top. The men at the walls and figures outside the gate were still exchanging shots. Valentine heard a great deal of fire on the hillside at the north end of camp. An occasional heavier whoomp sounded as one of the swivel guns discharged, joined by sharper explosions Valentine knew now to be rocket-propelled grenades. Feeling thick-limbed and dull-eared, he retrieved his PPD and replaced the drum. Shaking himself back to coherence, back sore from adrenaline burn, he readied the mounted machine gun and trained it on the gap at the gate. But even the muzzle flashes of the twisted cross guns had ceased. The gunfire around the camp faded into a chorus of the wounded. There was nothing left to kill. Valentine sagged against the butt of the gun, aware of nothing but the smells of cordite and hot metal. He waited for someone else to make the decisions. The Twisted Cross Reapers withdrew. Then the barrage started. A fall of mortar shells blasting man, animal, and wagon into pieces. Valentine had never experienced anything like it. Though they fell all around the wagons, each explosion seemed aimed at him. 30 minutes later, it stopped. Then the cleanup began.
Well, if this is victory, I'd hate to see a defeat.
The Outrider leader, Danvers, looked across the smoldering ruin of the campsite as dawn burned away the fog. Valentine had joined him in the survey, asking that he might also employ the Outriders in looking for a pile of four message from Duvalier. The Eagle's Wings brand, dead, lay in a long row. Blanket-covered bodies with feet protruding, at least in the cases where the deceased had both legs, from beneath the earth-toned shrouds. Among them was the camp engineer Waldron, killed by a Reaper while reloading a swivel gun. As they waited for the dawn and organized what was left of the defense, Danvers told Valentine about his Outriders' fortunes on the hill above the north wall. During the Twisted Cross retreat, they discovered insectoid grogs they called sand bugs scattered on the hill above the camp.
Well, sand bugs we can handle. They're out of the Dakotas, and they live mostly in the unoccupied prairie and badlands area. They look kind of like big sow bugs. They grab you in their front choppers and stick a needle with some kind of venom into you. If you're lucky, it kills you. If not, you get paralyzed. Either way, they throw you in a hole with a bunch of their eggs.
Weaknesses?
Valentine watched a widely spaced line of men on horses checking the grounds around the camp.
Well, they're the dumbest damn things. They don't organize at all, just scuttle into attack whenever they spot motion. Of course, if they made it to the walls, there would have been trouble. They can dig like hell, and they would have just hit the trench and gone right into the sand, come up and camp. That wouldn't have been pretty. What's left of my men are trying to hunt them down. They'll be hiding from the sun now that it's coming up. Last thing we need are sandbug nests on top of everything else.
Valentine's business was with the Twisted Cross, not New Grog Physiognomy. He hadn't seen Duvalier or discovered any message from her. Valentine found the deacon overseeing the care of the wounded and preparations for interment of the dead.
I can't find Mrs. Hendricks, Deacon, so I thought I'd say goodbye to you and ask you to tell her I'm on my way.
Hold on now, son. You need a break as much as everyone else. Mrs. Hendricks is riding with the Outriders. Let them see what those people have found out. No point in you wandering off half-cocked. Besides, we still haven't found sign of your friend. Don't you at least want to see her given a decent burial?
I think she's alive, Deacon.
Now, look here. Here comes the wagon master now. Talk it over with her.
Mrs. Hendricks rode in, bearing her exhaustion and loss with the same mild manner she used to order her camp. A man ran up to help her off her horse.
Thanks, Brent.
Valentine and a few others approached her, anxious for news.
Yes, they're gone. Their camp is empty. And no, we haven't found any of the missing people yet, except for Peter and Judith Riley. They're down amongst the trees, shot. That should take care of most of your questions.
The crowd mostly turned away, but Mrs. Hendricks chose to speak to Valentine first.
No sign of Alice, young man, but no body either.
Thank you. Wagonmaster, I don't think you have to worry about the Twisted Cross for the immediate future. They'll need time to regroup after this. I'd like to move on. Maybe I can follow them back to their hole. Seems like they're retreating.
We've survived before. We will again. You'll always be welcome among our teams, David. I saw you with that mobile bunker.
She looked at the battered tanker. It had been emptied of weapons. The automatic guns were now in the capable hands of the Eagles.
I didn't grow up in this area. I was born into the Freehold out in the Wind River in western Wyoming. I was a dispatch runner at one time, before I met my husband while he was scouting for the Eagle Brand cattle drive. I know the hunter's arts when I see them. Back in those days, I used to use my ears and nose just as much as my eyes. I'm sure you know what I mean.
She turned to her son.
Josh, we'll need a good saddle, horse, and rig for our friend here. He has to be riding on. Put a couple of bags of feed for the horse and something to keep him going on the saddle, would you?
Yes, ma'am.
Josh ran off to carry out his mother's order, despite the pain and fatigue showing in his eyes. The boy had changed from opinionated adolescent to dutiful outrider in a single night.
It might take a while. We're still rounding up the horses that bolted during the mortar barrage.
Mrs. Hendricks smiled at her son's back.
I think they pulled out south.
Her rosy features turned fierce.
We really gave him something to choke on. Oh, there was a pair of burned trucks and one heavy tow rig that looked like it plain blew off. Could be your Alice got in their camp when they were busy with us. Hope she didn't go up with their powder.
She said she'd leave word if she could. Did you see any markers, any piles of stones or wood?
No, but then the camp was a mess. She sure can cause a lot of trouble when she sets her mind.
You could say that. Now I need to find her.
You've been up all night, son. Crossing the dunes with Lord knows what still out there bleeding and angry isn't a job for someone who's half asleep. You need two hot meals and some sleep in between before I let you walk out my gate.
Valentine opened his mouth, but shut it again when Mrs. Hendricks planted hands on her hips. She jerked her chin down in a nod, putting the same authority in the gesture as Chalmers tapping her gavel. Valentine returned to the house wagon, grateful to give in to the wisdom of her words. Jocelyn Hendricks sat on the wooden steps, a cup of something steaming in her hands that smelled faintly of whiskey.
I put breakfast in there for you.
The circles under her eyes told her own story of the night.
There's so many dead. It felt strange to make coffee and food with bodies laying in rows. I feel like everything should stop for a while. But the cows still need to be milked.
She got up and opened the door for Valentine. He dragged himself inside and sat at the tiny table as she followed him in. Rolls and a slice of pie stood on the table next to a pitcher full of milk.
I couldn't touch meat, let alone cook it. Sorry.
The young woman opened a window.
I'm not that hungry.
Valentine poured himself some of the still warm buttermilk. The rich taste triggered something in him, and he raised the glass, gulping it down. What did not go into his stomach went down his chin. He put the glass down with a shaking hand. Jocelyn stared at him, biting her lower lip. Valentine, in a fog matching last night's, couldn't bring himself to make conversation.
Was this a bad battle?
No, you won.
She shifted her weight closer and brought up a rag to wipe off his chin.
There's blood or something all over your clothes. From when you were in that truck, so I hear. Though it's already turning into a tall tale. They've got you jumping like a deer, practically flying. Let me wash them for you. They can dry while you sleep.
He stood, still chewing, his mind taking in her movements, the taste of the food, and the little cabin, but not processing the information. He began to undress.
Oh!
She blushed and stepped outside and closed the door. Valentine handed her the bundle through the window.
Thanks, Miss Hendricks.
Jocelyn.
When he woke, Jocelyn was sitting on the cabin's tiny stool, oiling his boots. He either felt safe in the Eagle camp, or she sneaked in during his deepest cycle of sleep. He did not remember her re-entering the house wagon.
You're leaving.
She got up to show him his newly washed traveling clothes.
Oh. Soon.
He sat up, still wrapped in the blanket, and tried to blink the gum out of his eyes.
To find your wife?
Wife. She's more of a guide. I suppose I rely on her better than some men do their own wives.
I know it's none of my business, but do you and she...
She darted an embarrassed look at him from her lowered head.
No. We joke about it. Maybe under different circumstances, I'd think differently.
I had a boyfriend. He went on a drive to Denver. Never came back. That was over a year ago now. Guess he wanted to see the city. I was hoping for a letter or a message, but he never explained himself. It used to make me feel all warm and safe. Last night, when you talked to me, I felt warm and safe again. I wanted to kiss you.
Valentine felt lust and compassion war within him. She was an alluring young woman, but he was leaving almost within minutes.
Jocelyn, I bet every young man in this brand would walk through fire to kiss you. We're strangers.
These guys here are good men. I've known them all my life. All the older ones act more interested in the fact that I'm the wagon master's daughter. The young ones are just... kids in men's boots, if you know what I mean. You're... serious.
Valentine thought it a strange word. Perhaps it was apt. She placed the boots on the floor and sat at the edge of the bunk.
Since that meal after you rode in, I've been thinking about you. You probably think I'm just some silly hit girl. I'm not looking for a man permanent. If anything, you going away makes it better for me. I can just lose myself in it without worrying about the future. Know what I mean?
She took off her bandana and shook out her thick chestnut hair. She planted her palm between his pectorals. His heart thumped hard against his ribs as if it were trying to touch her. Valentine rose from the bed toward her, and they fell into each other's arms, need making the embrace smooth and unembarrassed. Even better for Valentine, it was unselfconscious. Instincts sublimated during months without touching a woman surged inside him, spilling out like rising floodwaters over an earthen dike. In an instant, the barriers dissolved. He took her rich, sage-sweetened hair in his hands as they kissed.
David. Who are you? I feel like I'm in heat.
He explored her neck with his mouth, the rest of her with his hand. He helped her wriggle out of her clothes, leaving him nude and aroused and pressed hard against her.
Oh.
He laid down to the sheets, She melted around him, greedily taking what he gave her, but what she gave him was even sweeter. Forgetfulness. For those minutes, there was no battle, no hunt, no responsibilities or fears, only a trembling woman in his arms. Their lovemaking was just kisses and softness and warmth and wetness and lust and motion, thrusting motion in which there wasn't a last night or tomorrow, just a climax like a lightning flash in the dark of the angry voids of their lives, a paroxysm that left him even more hungry for her and the oblivion of her body. Valentine trotted out of the Eagle's Wings camp on a bay quarter horse gelding. It was like riding on a mobile tower. The horse measured over 17 hands and had a rear end like a rowboat. The Eagles lined up to see him out of the gate. Valentine felt honored by the gesture, though he flushed at the little half wave Jocelyn gave. He saw her hands clasping and unclasping as he rode out and felt guilty. Valentine's only souvenir of the fight was a metal helmet, a piece of Kevlar with coal scuttle flanges protecting the neck. With his battered vest, it would add to his disguise should he have to resort to posing as a trooper again. Whoever wore it before invested in a cork and webbing liner and khaki cotton sunsheath, which did an admirable job of keeping him cool. He searched the Twisted Cross camp. It stood in the lee of the little ridge south of the larger, horizon-filling one that sheltered the Eagles' camp. A pair of outriders scavenged the wreckage, throwing everything from useless-looking scrap metal to expended shell casings into a wagon. Valentine rode up to them.
The man with the Tommy gun!
One of them waved back.
Hey, mister! We got word you were looking for piles of four of anything! Well, I think we found what you're looking for! That or these boys sure have a funny way of taking care of their dead! Look at Sam beside the trail yonder!
He pointed down the rutted cross-country trail. Valentine joined the waving outrider and found a little collection of four reaper heads arranged in a neat pile like cannonballs in an old fort. Bluebottle flies were already thick on the dead flesh. In places, masses of maggots had already exposed black bone. He dismounted, closed his nose and mouth, and knocked over the pile with his toe. Beneath the gruesome marker was a folded piece of paper. Valentine picked it up and recognized Duvalier's hand.
Ghost, I'm moving south to the Platte. I listened to the camp and there's another contingent over in Broken Bow. Just go south to the highway and follow it east, or read your map. If they've pulled out of there, let's meet south of Omaha where we talked about. I listened in on their general and their headquarters is there. They call it the Cave. Whatever that is. Don't be impressed with the pile. This is wounded I finished off while they were trying to get back to their camp. Smoke.
Valentine folded the note and put it in his map case. He returned to his horse, which already had its nose down in the dry grass, cropping some green weeds beneath the longer growth.
Broken Bow it is.